The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
You're here with the Talk Saratoga show this morning, and I'm so glad you are. It's a beautiful day out. I'll tell you, the weather has been so fantastic, although we need some rain. And I would wish that it would rain like crazy at night and be like this during the day, because then we'd have the best of both worlds. But I've got a guest on this morning who was on a couple months ago, and she's a Saratoga All-Star today, Liz Trisna. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Lynn. I got to call you Liz. I'm trying to get this.
I get called Liz all the time. I don't know.
Really? Well, I'm trying to get this CD out. Otherwise, I would have known, because I know you. So, Pitney Meadows Farms. You know, you were on a couple months ago, and the show was such a big hit. There were so many people that had told me that they want to come down to visit the farm, and I told them to look you up. I don't know how long during the day you're there, because I know you probably have a lot of office work and things to do too.
We do, but this time of year staff is on the farm, so because we want to be there to interact with visitors, and because that's really what fills us up. The office work is what we have to do to keep going and keep running, but we love showing people the farm. So
well, they're coming down. I mean, they want to meet you because they heard you on the show last time, and a couple of them listened to the podcast of it. But so you're going to see a lot of them.
Awesome.
And I know I'll see you up at the track this summer, as we talked about. Mutual friend. And so it'll be fun.
Yeah,
you got a lot going on, though. You know, just to catch up on people that may not have heard the first show, if you could, give us the background and the history of Pitney Meadows.
Sure. So the Pitney Meadows Community Farm became a nonprofit 5 years ago. So we just celebrated our 5-year anniversary last December. And the nonprofit came from the Pitney family, who had been farming that land for 3 generations. They bought the property in 1862. They really wanted to see the farming legacy in Saratoga Springs continue. You know, generations had driven on West Avenue past the farm and seen that farm. It was a really big part of everyone's lives. And the Pitney family decided, rather than sell to have that property developed, they wanted to preserve it for generations to come, which is great and wonderful. And all of this work wouldn't be possible without the Pitney family. So the nonprofit started to really kick things off. We have our community gardens, which people can come, individuals, families, organizations, and rent garden space. So that was the starting point for the farm. And then we've developed a lot of programs over the years. So we started our farm fields. And so now we have about 15 acres in production. And we do a UPIC CSA. We have a farm stand on site. And then we do a lot of work with food security. So we donate about 40% of everything we grow to food security. And then also we have events. We have educational programs. Educational programs has really been ramping up this year with our full-time education director. Yeah. So we're excited to bring kids and adults onto the farm to learn more about what we're doing. Because as an organization, we've accomplished all of this stuff. You know, we have events, we have the community garden, we have the farm. But we really want to kind of explain the why behind it, of like why this is valuable and why you should care about pollinators and why you should think about composting. So it's been really great to bring people in and really explain what we're doing. You can walk the community gardens and appreciate the beauty, but it's really great to have those eureka moments where it's like, oh, that's what garlic looks like when it grows,
sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, we were talking a little bit about this just before the show went on, about being part of the land, and we can tell the difference between somebody that grew up on a farm or as opposed to someone who went to school for farming. You know, people may know a little bit about what's at Pitney Meadows, but they really should be exposed to the whole thing to get an appreciation of what goes on behind the scenes in our lives that would be interesting for, like, myself. You can grow a garden, okay, but you don't know what goes into the garden, what you should do, what it does, and, you know, like you said, like the pollination and the composting, easy things to do, can save you a lot of money.
Yeah, for sure. Except for, you know, it can sometimes be an expensive hobby as well, but it can be, so at Pitney Meadows, we want to make it really accessible, because if you think about putting the infrastructure of the garden, like if you're not comfortable and know what you're doing, you can make a huge investment of a garden and not see that return on your investment.
Exactly.
I can speak from experience because I've gardened for the first time last year and I didn't produce quite what I thought I would, but we have a community garden director, Joyce, who is wonderful. So she can help with, you know, you can apply amendments at this time. This is the plant spacing. This is the time of year that you plant it, because, I mean, you can go and put in this beautiful garden in your backyard, but having that little bit of hand-holding and guidance, because there's so much information out there that can be really overwhelming. My mom started a garden once I got into farming, and she had a million questions of, what about this? What about that? And I'm like, Mom, stop looking at the gardening blogs. Like, it's too much. Just look at seed catalogs. So just thinking about, like, it's a really great introduction. Like, it doesn't need to be extravagant or over the top. It's really, really simple and basic, and it all comes down to good soil.
Oh, definitely. Good soil. And I think planning, too.
Yep.
I had a garden when we first moved into our house, and it didn't get a lot of sun.
Yeah.
And I tried to grow everything. Eggplant, peppers, tomatoes, zucchini, garlic. I grew garlic. You know, the thing that people don't realize, that every vegetable has to be taken care of in a different way.
Yeah.
And, you know, because like with the zucchini and the squash on mounds, and mm-hmm. you have to be careful they don't get too wet, because,
yeah.
you know, then you don't have a crop and you're saying, oh, no, what did I do wrong? So you have to learn these things, and you're a great resource, the farm is, to get people's knowledge.
Yeah, and it's bringing it really simple to, like, the core of what you need to know. And then you can explore and try different things. So we did a workshop this spring that worked really well, where we had little, like, cutouts and dots of, this is what a tomato plant looks, this is the size of the tomato plant when you put it in the ground, because it's tiny, and you're like, oh,
yeah.
It's, like, it's got plenty of space, that's fine. But then you think about the footprint of a tomato plant when it's mature, and it's like, oh, that little babe needs a lot of space to grow.
Exactly.
So it's seeing that if you haven't experienced that full season of a garden, you don't know what that tomato plant is, how much space it's going to take up. So having that that knowledge up front for planning is really helpful, because, I mean, the community garden, it's a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
We let people do their own thing and grow, because, I mean, worst comes to worst, like, your tomato plant has a little bit less space. There's no dire consequence. But that way we can set people up for a little bit more of a success, to see that, like, oh, yeah, that tomato plant, like, you need 2 feet.
Right.
And then this is why.
Yeah. Well, you know, and another thing, I guess after you have your first garden where you've got everything down pat, you know, you've when I said you have to plan ahead, my thing was, all right, you plant 6 tomato plants, because, oh, I'm going to get a couple of tomatoes. Then you have more tomatoes than you have. You don't know what to do with them. So you're giving them away when maybe you could be canning or,
yep.
you know, putting them up. But you've got to plan that. Because
right. And so we do offer cooking classes as well. Okay. So June 30th, we're going to have our first cooking class, because, you know, growing and producing it gets people just so far. And then you need to know what to do with all of that produce. So we're happy to support. And we have great community partners that help us do that. So, yeah, it's really, we're trying to look at the big picture, because we don't want to help people so far and then be like, okay, figure out what to do.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, like, I always laugh at tomato plants, because they're like machine guns when they start coming out.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, my goodness gracious, you have so many.
Yeah. And that's a great community feel of, like, you know, talking to your neighbors and doing canning parties or going to workshops together and swapping recipes and all of that. So, you know, it's really great and uplifting ways to connect with people that you sure. wouldn't otherwise connect with.
Definitely. And, you know, I had a friend years ago that had a big piece of property, and they had a very large garden, and Pat was canning and putting up beans and peas and for the winter. And I'll tell you, their freezer was full. They didn't have to buy a vegetable, you know, almost all year long, because they grew a lot of their own stuff. It was amazing. And you'd go over there for dinner on, let's say, Sunday, and then she'd pull some vegetables out that they grew, and it tasted just like they picked them off the plant, you know?
Yeah.
And there's something really neat about that. But you have to, that's a learning thing. You know, like you say, you offer these programs to learn how to do this stuff.
Yeah, and we're fine with meeting people where they are. You know, if they don't want to plant a garden and do it themselves, then they can frequent our farm stand, or they can join our Pick Your Own CSA. You know, so they don't necessarily have to grow it, but they can still be on the farm and experience it and pick it. And one thing that we're trying new this year that I'm pretty excited about is we're doing guided U-picks. So on Saturdays, folks that didn't want or weren't able to sign up for the full season of the CSA, they can do a drop-in on Saturdays where someone can come and show them the farm and do that education. Just because we want to, thinking about like accessibility and serving the entire community, if someone doesn't want to commit to a full season or is visiting for the track or whatever their situation may be, they can come and have that personal experience. Because during COVID and just being on the farm, you know, people aren't there just for the land. They're there for that connection.
Sure.
And nothing replaces, you know, having that interaction, because people always learn on the farm. I mean, I even learn from visitors of them talking about their gardens or their grandparents' gardens. So we're really trying to make sure that we have those meaningful interactions, because, I mean, COVID taught us all that that's kind of what we live for.
Right. And also what post-COVID, and the way the world is now, especially, you know, you look all over the world, but especially in our country with food prices the way they are.
Yeah.
You know, if you can raise some of your own food, that's a huge help today, because it's more expensive to be a vegetarian than it is to eat meat. I mean, you know, my daughter is a vegetarian, and what she spends for vegetable and produce, I mean, and you can grow a lot of that yourself.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why I became a farmer. I couldn't afford my food habit, so it was just much easier to grow it yourself. And there's little things you can do. And one thing that we're really interested in is explaining the different scales of what you can do. You know, well, I mean, you can walk the farm trail and see what the farm is doing and see, you know, what someone can do to grow food with a greenhouse, with a tractor, and all of that. But not everyone has, I mean, very few people have access. There's 2% of our population that's farmers. It's good to know about that, but thinking about what you can do on your own. So we have community garden plots, but we also started to incorporate a lot of education in our community gardens. So we have a back section, which is just dedicated to teaching people how to garden. So you don't necessarily have to be a community gardener at Pitney Meadows to be a part of our gardening community. So we're going to do demonstration and education, but also thinking about scalability of, you know, if you have a patio, you still can grow herbs. You can still have a 5-gallon bucket with a pot with cherry tomatoes, herbs, lettuces, all that kind of stuff. So it doesn't have to be, like, growing your own food doesn't have to be limited to someone who has access to a tractor.
Sure.
You can do different things, and it can be pretty inexpensive with 5-gallon buckets.
Well, you know, not only that, but the produce, too. I mean, vegetables, too. You should have some knowledge, because you can still be picking vegetables at Christmas time.
Yeah.
Brussels sprouts.
Mm-hmm.
And there's different. So, I mean, if somebody didn't know that, you know, that enjoyed gardening and enjoyed the vegetables that you could reap from that time of the year.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that they should know about. So there's so much.
Yeah, and just being on the farm. I mean, I encourage everyone. Like, people drive by all the time, and they're like, you know, I always wondered what you did, but I never pulled in. It's like, just pull in the driveway. We're so happy to have you. We're open dawn to dusk 7 days a week, because even just walking on the farm, you'll see stuff that you weren't exposed to before. And that's what we're all about, is just having those like eureka moments of, oh, I didn't realize that's how radishes looked like when they were growing, or that's broccoli, and everything that goes into growing your own food, because we're so used to going to a grocery store and not thinking about, you know, how it was grown or how it was produced. And I was totally unaware until I started working on farms.
Yeah.
So.
That's why I can't believe you made a statement a little earlier about your garden last year. And I'm thinking you made that story up, actually, because I can't believe it.
It's something that actually, I was talking to our community garden director, Joyce, about it. And she's like, it's good to let people know, because even if you're a farmer and it's your profession, like, you still have good years and you still have bad years. And so it was a great kind of buy-in experience with our community gardeners. It's sure. Like, I'm learning too.
Well, and there's always little tricks you can learn all the time. You may think you're an expert in farming. There's always things you can learn. I mean, one of the things that my friends used to laugh about was when I grew eggplants, because they would be hanging upside down from the vine, and the eggplant would be so heavy, but the little stem that attached to the main plant was so thin. They said, how does that happen? Why doesn't that fall right off?
Yeah.
And that's the wonder of gardens. It's the wonder of vegetables. You would think that could not happen, because the big part was on the bottom, and the top's held on by a little stem. And those moments, because they learned something. Just when I had that garden, you know, they'd come over and say, geez, I never knew eggplants grew that way.
Yeah, and I think that's why Pitney Meadows is really great at bringing people of different diverse backgrounds together. You know, it doesn't matter your position or your economics or anything, just because we all have this wonder around growing food, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't matter who you are. You still can talk to your neighbor about growing tomatoes and really enjoy it and really connect on it.
Well, you know, I had mentioned, when I was a young child, my mother worked, which back then, a lot of women worked back in the 60s, but late 50s, 60s, but it wasn't meant that, not like today.
Yeah.
But my mother worked, my father worked, and she would drop me off to a friend of hers to babysit us, and it was a farm.
Mm.
So I was around cows and dairy farming. I don't know, just I have an awe for that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, farmers work hard no matter what, produce or dairy farming and that. It's a life, 365 days a year, and they don't get any time off. They work hard. Their benefits they get from it are more of a self-rewarding fulfillment rather than a monetary fulfillment.
Yep.
And so when you're exposed to that, it makes you kind of understand a little about what people go through, and like you say, everybody should, when they drive by that farm, they should just stop in,
just pull in the driveway.
I know it's, and I only live up the street, couple blocks away, and I go by there every day, and it's just amazing to see how it's grown. And now, I don't know, it's fantastic. And I think that was the last farm in the city of Saratoga, correct? That's the last farmland in the city of Saratoga.
Yeah, in the city.
Yeah.
So.
And agriculture, I think, is still number one industry in Saratoga County.
Know. There's a lot of great farms in Saratoga County.
And it's just, you know, I mean, people just don't think about it. I had a friend who raised chickens, had chickens at her house, lived outside the city, and she would always be giving us eggs. I would pick her child up to take to the school I dropped my kids off to. And I remember this, I would give some to a friend of mine, and her son wouldn't eat them because he wanted to buy the eggs in a store, because he didn't like the eggs that came out of a chicken. So he bought the eggs in the store.
Right. Yeah. Again, like kind of like broadening people's horizons. So yeah, I was in the farm stand and I was talking to one of our customers because we work with a local farm. So we, in our farm stand, we support 15 other local farms as well, not just our produce. So we have some eggs for sale from a neighboring farm. And I was just talking about how my husband was at the grocery store and some people were buying eggs and all that was left was the brown eggs. Okay. And he's even from the grocery store. And the two women were talking about, like, I don't know if these are okay. They're the brown ones. And my husband's just like, it's fine. You won't notice a difference. Yeah, like, no, just try it. It's really? Okay. So, yeah, and it's all about, you know, just exposure and trying different things. Because, you know, trying a new food can be really intimidating, or planting a seed can be really intimidating. It's like, no, it's fine.
Yeah, really.
Just go with it. Try something different.
And you'll show them how to nurture and how to make that from the seed up to the plant, a fruit-bearing plant. My grandfather had grape arbors in the backyard because he grew up in Italy and he never drank wine. I don't know why he had the grape arbor. I think it's just every Italian immigrant had a grape arbor in their backyard. And he used to sit under it, and the summer would be hotter than heck, and he'd sit in there, and it was nice and cool. But we always had nice grapes in the fall. And, you know, like I say, there is a fulfillment when you can eat something that you've grown or had a hand in.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, my great-grandmother, she had a huge garden, canned all of her food, and that was just a huge part of her life. But then, you know, my grandmother, once you could buy canned goods from the grocery store and freezing stuff and all of that, you know, that was seen as like a point of pride that, like, I can go to the grocery store and I can buy this processed food. So there was this generation gap, and my mom grew up not canning, not growing their own food because it was kind of a status thing.
Yeah.
And now we're getting back to, no, I really want to have some ownership of where my food comes from. And I think COVID sparked a lot of that when the grocery store shelves were empty.
Yeah.
You know, me and my friends as farmers, like, I kind of didn't know that. You know, I was buying meat from my friend, and I was going to the local dairy to buy milk.
Sure.
And, you know, people would talk about it, but during the start of the pandemic, I kind of just didn't even realize that the shelves were bare because, you know, I support all the local businesses, and they weren't affected in the same way.
Well, you know, I like to do that, too, but there's only one thing that you can't grow, and that's toilet paper.
It's true. Oh, man. I did know about the toilet paper situation.
Well, I'll tell you, I knew something was going on. So I was buying, you know, one or two a week. And
it makes you think about things.
It does.
And I think that's really valuable because we take a lot for granted. You know, lives are challenging. We all have a lot going on, but there's certain stuff that, you know, we can just do, like, turn a light switch or get running water. And I think COVID made us stop and think about, well, what if that went away?
Well, you know, there's very few people today. There may be a small percentage that could go back 100 years or 150 years and probably would not make 10 years old because they wouldn't know how to grow things. They wouldn't know how to, 'cause back then you had to grow everything or you didn't eat.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you could go to, I guess, a general store, but it was nothing like it is today. But it's, people were self-sufficient then. And, you know, I was the same way. My grandmother had a group of four couples that were very close.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother would make sauce. And the other couple, her husband used to get mushrooms.
Oh, yeah.
So my grandmother would make the sauce and do the mushrooms, and then she'd can that, and they'd split. The four couples would split it, and one of the guys used to make wine, and they shared things.
Right.
I mean, they may not have been able to grow everything themselves, but
right.
And like you said, that's what you did.
Yeah, we did. So we have our Wondering Wandering Wednesday programs.
Yeah.
And so they're free kids programs every Wednesday at 4. We had one recently that was how to make your own mushroom logs.
Okay.
So my husband and I, we had some extra logs. So I talked to our education director and was like, hey, do you want to use this for a kids program? And she's like, sure. So we had the kids, you know, using the power tools and drilling the logs and inoculating it. And it was a great program. And you don't think about, you know, growing mushrooms as a kids program.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're like, let's start them when they're young and think about, you know, where mushrooms come from and how they grow and the different ways you can grow it. And, you know, Sarah had this great, like, sawdust bag system. So we're planting a kids garden and doing that part of our kids programming. So the kids programming has their own garden, and she's going to use winter squash vines to shade the mushrooms. Oh, wow. To have it be an integrated system and see what you can do in your backyard. And it was just, you know, I was doing emails and catching up on some work at the farm, and all I could hear is like kids laughing and then power tools. And I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you socialize, you learn and you have fun, and it's something you can do rather than just stay inside and play video games.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good point, because like we were talking about Pitney Meadows kids programming, and what's nice about our programs is you don't have to be good at anything. You just got to be interested and show up. You know, like one of our assistant farm manager, Kelly, who's, you know, one of our all-star farmers, her kid comes to our programs and loves it because he's not very competitive.
Okay.
You know, like he does some sports and stuff, but he just blossoms on the farm and like takes leadership of like, this is what you do. Cause, Kelly and her family, they grow mushrooms at their home. So like, he's just like, oh, this is daily life for me.
That's good.
So,
though. Yeah. I mean, that's fantastic because like you say, I mean, we talked a little bit about this. It's unrelated, basically, to farming, but the BOCES programs where you learn a trade. You may not be the A-plus student or B-plus student, but, man, you could have a trade and be the tops in that trade.
And we all are different. You know, our minds work differently, and, you know, some things click with people, but, I mean, all of those skills are incredibly valuable, and that's something that farming taught me is, you know, being able to fix a small engine is like gold if you're in farming.
Sure,
and a huge skill. Yeah, we had a relationship with BOCES, but I think COVID made it a little bit challenging. So we're now working more with students, and BOCES students are being putting up one of our greenhouses just because that's a pretty unique experience. And for us, if there's something that we have to do, we want to think about how we can bring the community onto the farm and make it an educational experience. So, you know, if we have to do a planting or do some task where, you know, staff might not think it's very interesting because we do it all of the time, but we're starting to take a look at different projects and say, you know, we do this because we have to, but also maybe we could invite the public and make it a learning experience because, you know, for example, picking sweet potatoes, you know, as a farmer picking sweet potatoes, you're like, all right, great. Another row of sweet potatoes I have to harvest. It's not this exciting adventure, but for someone who's never been on a farm before, seeing the sweet potatoes vine and how they're grown and the tractor, you know, lifting the sweet potatoes for you to pick up, that's a great experience.
I can imagine. So, I'd like to see that myself.
Well, we'll let you know in the fall.
Yeah, let me know.
Come and help, because it's a great community event. You know, we had a synagogue come and help, and then we had Saratoga Hospital's Community Health Center, who we have a really great relationship with. Their staff came and helped us harvest sweet potatoes, and they said it was such a great experience. It was this moment where I was like, oh, right. Like, if this is not your day-to-day, it is a great experience, and it's a great exposure of trying something new and different. And just having that pause and that reset of being in a quiet, natural environment. As a farmer, I don't really think about that because that's going to work.
Yes.
And that's a great that's a great privilege, but, you know, kind of encouraging other people to experience that as well. And that's the beauty of Pitney Meadows.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm in Kiwanis, which is a service organization. Excuse me. And we sponsor key clubs in high school. And that would be a good project for two clubs to work with, the kids, and because they're juniors and seniors.
Oh, yeah.
and our Kiwanis Club, I'd love to see sweet potatoes out.
I'll keep you posted. Yeah, we're planting them this week. So amazing. We'll start working on them so you can help with harvest.
Yeah, I can put my initials in a sweet potato.
There you go.
Rick was here.
Rick was here. And then one of our community partners will like open up the box and be like, "Who is Rick?" Yeah. we'll have
that,
a prize.
That idiot on the stage. Yeah. I spoke about dairy farming. I don't know why. I guess I've had a couple friends, like the young lady I was telling you about, my in-law's best friends. As a matter of fact, it was my mother-in-law's maid of honor, had a dairy farm in Easton, which is east of here. And, you know, just being around dairy farmers, you just learn to appreciate. Like you said, if you know how to fix a small engine, it's gold. Because if you have to hire somebody, the farmers don't make much money. They really don't. And if you have to pay to get all those repairs done, I mean, that adds up. But I told you this friend of mine, she's in the Miss New York USA pageant this weekend. And she grew up on a dairy farm, still goes from her job as a surgical technician every day in Amsterdam and Latham. She goes between, but goes home to Utica to work on the farm at night. And her speech today, you know, how they tell what they do and what they're going to do, is dairy farming and the importance of dairy in your life. And you don't think where it comes from. You know, I mean, everybody knows from a cow, but how, you know, just the dairy farming and so on. And I think that's pretty interesting that she would do something like that in a pageant. And I think that may give her an edge only because, you know, she's a pretty girl, but she's smart and she tells it in a way that's down to earth, just like you do when you talk about farming and that.
Yeah. So the Pitney family was in dairy for years. And I mean, Bill Pitney still on the farm, can't get him off the tractor. He's such a wealth of knowledge just from growing up on a farm and, you know, having to work. And, you know, he was telling me about how, I was talking about, we've just bought a new tractor, an Alice Chalmers G, which I love. And, it's got a cultivator and it's a manual. It's not hydraulic. So you have to raise and lower the cultivator. And, a lot of farmers had issues with their rotator cuff just from the constant raising and lowering. And now, you know, everything's automatic with tractors. So I was talking to Bill of like, oh, yeah, the only drawback to this tractor is you have to raise and lower it. And he's like, what do you think farmers have been doing for generations? And I was like, oh, right. Yeah. So he was telling about how when he was a kid, he was on the tractor and he'd be cultivating the corn. And then he would have to, like, get off the seat to work the brakes and the clutch and get the cultivator up and down because he was, like, 13.
Oh, my gosh.
On the tractor cultivating the corn.
Well, that's how farm kids work.
Yeah. So it's just great to think about, you know, how different farming is from a very short time. I mean, Bill Pitney is on the farm now, and we have hydraulics, and we have electronics, and all kinds of stuff. So,
well, everything. I mean, farming today, big farms, is all computerized and programmed. I mean, they turn the water on this portion of the farm, or the, you know, we talked about fertilizing plants and farms, and I was watching a show. I can't remember what, probably PBS, I don't know. And they had a farmer in, and he was complaining about the fertilizer this year.
Yeah.
He buys $1 million worth of fertilizer a year. His farm is like, it's probably the size of a city.
Right.
And he'll only be able to get half of what he needs. So he's going to have to cut out production on half of that property because the fertilizer comes from the Baltic area.
Right.
And they can't get it shipped over here.
Yeah, small-scale farmers, really, I mean, there's not as much incentive or subsidies and stuff for small farmers, but you know, they're not as reliant on those inputs.
Sure.
So, you know, our farm, you know, some people are asking me about fertilizer and how that's affecting us, because that's something in the news that people are reading. And for us, it doesn't affect us at all, because our fertilizer is our neighbor's horses.
Right.
And leaves from Spa Park. And so we're still good, because we make our own compost. Sure. On site. And that's something that we're looking to increase as well, and thinking about accepting community compost and making that an educational program. Because if we need to produce compost on site and we're already doing it, let's get the community involved and get people knowing about it. So I think in a way that, you know, small farms have a lot of hardships, but again, you know, they're kind of more of a closed loop and aren't dependent on fertilizer companies across the world.
Right. Well, you know, the sad thing today, which is why I think Pitney Meadows is such a great thing, so many farms are being bought up by big farms.
Yeah.
And the small farmer is, you know, has to give up because of either pricing or, you know, I mean, it is a career of passion.
Yeah.
It's not a career, you know, like you would go into the, just think about making money.
Yeah.
It's a passion.
Yeah.
And like we said, you know, kids, farmers' kids, they get right into it when they're 5, 6 years old, and they see everything. I mean, they grow up in birthing of the animals and everything. And it's an entirely different world, but it's one that is so rewarding. That's why it goes generation to generation.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of interest in getting into farming, but one big barrier is access to land, because land is so expensive now. And so at Pitney Meadows, we're looking at, okay, we've got a lot of land and a lot of property, so let's start working on improving the soil for the we have 100 acres.
Right.
We're currently farming on 15. So that takes time, but thinking about really a solid property plan to improve the soil so we can, you know, maybe help young farmers who are starting get access to land.
Sure.
Or, you know, there's a huge learning curve. So thinking about, you know, we have this really great program in the community garden that if you're intimidated, you don't have your own gardening space, you can come in, learn, and have that support of this is what you do at this time, this is some infrastructure. Thinking about doing something similar in our 100 acres for farmers. So all, like, because we have such opportunity for different scales on the property and really bringing people in and making use of what we have.
Sure. Now, let's say I want a garden, but I can't put one in my backyard. You offer garden or plot spaces for people, correct?
Yep. So we have 125 plots right now.
Okay.
And so they are pretty popular. So we have a waiting list, but we do a good job of getting people off the waiting list whenever we can.
Go in and destroy somebody's garden so they give up and then someone can take their place.
We don't encourage sabotage. but, you know, stuff happens and life happens, and we understand it. So I think during COVID, a lot of people's lives were in different weird motions and making decisions. So we had some turnover, but it was great because we had a long waiting list, and we got everyone garden plots. And, you know, some people, I mean, we just had a couple people off the waiting list too, because someone said, you know what, I just can't commit to a garden this year. So we get someone off the waiting list, and Joyce does a really great job of pairing new gardeners with experienced gardeners.
Oh, neat.
So she's really strategic about what plots people have.
Sure.
So if someone seems a little bit new and intimidated, she'll put them next to a really experienced gardener.
Oh, that's nice.
A little bit further in the back, so it's no pressure. And then also, just because we do have a waiting list, we want to make sure that we can offer support for people that can't have gardens at their home. So we offer volunteer opportunities as well, and then educational opportunities. So even if you don't get one of our plots, we still welcome people in the garden to help with, we have some pollinator habitat. So we have a butterfly garden for a demonstration, and then a pollinator garden. So if folks want to still garden but can't have a plot, you know, volunteering is a great way.
Sure.
To learn and get exposed to everything that's going on the farm.
Well, one thing that I think people were made aware of that never thought about it before was they had a no mow May.
Yes, yes, we love sustainable Saratoga. Yeah, they're doing no mow May.
And so, and that was to encourage bee pollination, right?
Yeah.
Because are we having problems with bees, you know, with the pollination? I mean, the bees themselves, correct?
Yeah, there's been a lot going on with the honeybee community of just issues and pest issues, you know, because bees, they get mites and different pest pressure and they're swarming. And there's different stuff going on with bees. I don't think we have all the answers of what exactly is happening. One of our board members, Jen, has a lot of experience about bees. So we were excited to have her on the board because bees are a huge part of the work that we do. But also thinking about, you know, honeybees are super important, but also the native bee population. So we actually, the Xerxes Society, they do a lot of work with pollinator. They're doing a talk with us this month about the importance of pollinator habitat and pollinators, because native bees actually pollinate, I think their success rate is like 75%. And honeybees is a lot lower. It's like 25%.
Wow.
So thinking about kind of like importing, you know, bees in, you know, it's like we're encouraging them in this habitat, but they're not native. Okay. So thinking about really encouraging the native bees to do that pollination. So on the farm, we do a lot of cover cropping and planting flowers and doing all of that. But rather than keeping bees on the property, you know, let's just make an ecosystem. You know, Mother Nature is great. She knows what she's doing.
Exactly.
So let's farm smarter, not harder, and then just create this whole property where you have the beneficial insects that go after the pests.
Yeah, so, exactly. I mean, like, people don't like possums.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but they eat ticks.
Yeah.
And so they're a predator of, you know, a pest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people don't think about that or know what they do. But now I don't want anybody to buy about 4 or 5 possums if you're having a tick problem around your house because, gosh, I wouldn't want you to do that. But
yeah, it's just creating opportunities for nature to take care of itself.
Exactly.
If you start importing a bunch of possums, I think that'll probably backfire on
oh,
you.
Oh, yeah, it will.
We are not endorsing possum importing, but
that's right. No. I made that up, so don't even think that that's part of the show this morning. Well, someone told me that, and by the way, I want to say hi, Lynn and I want to say hi to Kim. And
yes.
We know you're out there.
We know you're out there, and Kim's going to be cleaning up the backstretch campground this morning, so she wanted me to make a plug for that.
Okay.
So, Kim, we appreciate you, and we know that you're hard at work helping on the campground, so
yes.
Want to say hi.
And you know, we were talking about how nobody can keep up with you because you move so fast, so we want to say hi and have a great day today. Friends of my in-laws, he was a 4-H agent all his life. Matter of fact, out on the 4-H on Middle Lane Road there.
Yeah.
If you turn in Lounsbury Road.
So we just did our tractor safety training there for our staff. Yeah. So all our staff are now trained on tractor safety, whether you're in the office or not.
Oh, wow.
Some of my office staff, Emily, she was like, I don't need to know all of this stuff. And I was like, but it's good. Yeah. We got to, yeah, there's some hairy stuff that can happen with the tractor. But, yeah, we did our tractor safety training there. It was
neat,
great.
Neat. Well, when you turn on Lounsbury Road, that was named after him.
Oh, awesome.
He was a big part of getting that 4-H bill and going. But he raised bees and sold honey.
Mm.
And, you just don't, see, people don't think about what bees can do.
Yeah.
They think they're pests, you know. Get rid of that bee.
It's like, no,
but
let's nurture.
But someone told me that if you, that bees are a pollinator, they make honey.
Yep.
Local bees have, what's the word I'm saying, that every area has different types of honey because of the bees that pollinate in their area.
Yeah, so whatever they have access to. So there's like clover honey because sure. they get their pollen from clover. And actually, one of my friends who keep bees, he grew a ton of tomatoes, and his honey kind of tasted like tomatoes.
Really?
There's Saratoga Tea and Honey downtown if you right. want to support your local honey source. But they have a like buckwheat honey and carrot honey, like all these different kinds of honey that you can try. Because it's just like a tomato variety. Like you can go to the grocery store and get this one tomato variety. There's a world of tomato varieties out there to try with different flavors and nuances. And it's the same thing with honey.
Yeah.
And it tastes, it looks totally different. And it tastes totally different.
Yeah. And that's great. I mean, so we want to help protect the honeybees. So if you didn't do the No Mow May this month, last month, let's try it for next year.
Yeah. And with fuel prices.
Oh, God.
it was great not to mow for the month
right.
of May. So,
you could have paid somebody 10 years ago to mow your lawn every week for what it costs now. It costs like $10 to fill your tank, your lawnmower up, and it's amazing.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that farmers are facing is like diesel prices.
Oh my gosh.
Through the roof.
$6 a gallon or more.
It's yeah. I'm scared to get our diesel bill.
I know.
So
it's yeah, especially on the farm. I mean, that's a lot of property.
So, yeah, so thinking about like, yeah, we're taking a look at our farming practices and thinking about tilling less and being a little bit less dependent on tractors, because with fuel what it is right now, it's really making you think about it. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I wish I wasn't paying as much for fuel as I am now, but, you know, we can, humans adapt. So, yeah. you know, we'll adapt and we'll figure it out.
Well, I would hope so. I think it's foolish the way it is, but that's my opinion. But, you know, maybe Kim could set you up with some horses.
There we go.
And a plow, and you can rust the tractors like a couple days a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want you to think about that, Kim.
Yeah, Kim, figure out my plowing issues, please. Get those retired horses out to the farm.
That's right. Get them out on the farm. We'll have BOCES make some plows.
Yeah, there you go. It takes a community.
That's right. It takes a community.
Yeah.
One of the things that my wife appreciates, and I think you were the push behind this, was the walking trails that you have at the farm.
So that was Peter Gutos, who is our facilities, who's really great. That's something that he's had in the works for years. And I greatly appreciate, because I take advantage of those trails as well. You know, a long day at work, there's nothing beats taking a run on the Pitney Trail. So there was a lot of really great community partners involved with that. And it's dedicated to Michael J. Pitney, who is, you know, someone that really got the farm to where it is today of, you know, working with his family to turn it into a nonprofit. So, I mean, that trail is really great. And, you know, if you're not, we want to be a resource to everyone in the community. And I think the trail is a really great thing that anyone can use no matter what. Speaking of Kim, I know Kim uses the trail quite frequently as well.
Yeah,
so.
So she's right in my backyard almost. Yeah. Yay, Peter. I don't know what that means.
Peter Gutos. I mean, champions the trail. So, yeah, it wouldn't be in place without him and also the Pitney family.
Yeah. Well, you know, here again, farmers are a different breed. And they're giving. Not that there's business people that aren't giving. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But farmers are willing to share. And if the Pitney family didn't do what they did, they could have sold that property for townhouses or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been 300 homes, and now it's an open space for the community to enjoy. And
beautiful.
You know, I was talking to the Pitney family about, oh, is it weird that, you know, your childhood memories are now, you know, just open to the public and people can come? And they're like, no, it's great that other children have memories at Pitney Meadows. It's not just our kids.
Yeah, well, can you imagine, you know, the Pitney family driving by 300 housing development?
I don't think Bill Pitney could take that.
You know what? Even myself, I mean, I drive by there, and it's just neat to know what's going on that property. And to, I mean, another housing development. It's sad they're taking down all our woods and that disrupts an ecosystem that we're losing. And I don't know, but I think it's great. You know, it's just amazing. We have a big fundraiser coming up.
We do. Yeah, so we have our Fire Feast, and we're really very excited to relaunch it this year. So we've taken a two-year pause due to COVID, but it was time. We needed to do the relaunch and welcome the community back to the farm. And we're really excited because when Fire Feast started, it was all about getting people talking about what the farm could be. And now we're welcoming the community back to say, this is what the farm is right now, and we'd love for you to be a part of it. So we're going to have cocktails and some appetizers in our community garden.
Okay.
And then we're going to have carriage rides through our farm fields.
Really?
Which we're really excited about. So our program assistant, Matt, he's going to be doing tours of our farm fields to get people out to see what we're doing. And then we're going to have some really awesome local chefs cooking some of our produce and some local meat over an open flame. So it's going to be a really great event where, you know, we're just welcoming really great people to the farm to talk about the work that we're doing and eat some really, really good food.
And this is when again?
So this is July 19th. It's a Tuesday. So everyone that's going to the track, when you have your break,
right.
We're smart at Pitney Meadows. We do it during a dark day.
You did it during a dark day.
Yeah, so Tuesday, July 19th, it's going to be really fun.
That's amazing.
And doing a little plug for one of our mascots, Twinkie. Twinkie's a miniature pony.
Okay.
Who will be featured at Fire Feast. And word on the street is Twinkie might be dressed like a sunflower.
Oh,
so
really?
You don't want to miss that.
No. I mean, you could have Twinkie the midget gardener, and I'd be in my element there. You know?
Yeah. I mean, we welcome all types of Pitney Meadows. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I feel good about
that. Yeah, there you go.
I can, We have about 6 minutes left. And I want to talk about some of the other programs that go on at Pitney Meadows because, you know, like you said, it's a wonderful place. You do more things there than people know. I mean, it's just not growing vegetable plants.
Yeah, we do a lot more.
You know, like the Kids Garden Club.
Yep.
We may have touched on that a little bit.
Yep. So we have the Kids Garden Club, the Harvest Cooking Club, and Farm Explorers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a children's greenhouse, and we did some really great kids programming that of seed starting and planting. But in the community garden, you know, it's individuals' plots, so kids would come and get excited about gardening. But it's like, oh no, please don't touch that. That's someone's tomato that they've been babying for a couple months now. So we really wanted to create a space where kids could touch everything and explore and have some ownership. So, you know, the program does go out into the farm field so kids can see, you know, agriculture. So at our last Harvest Cooking Club, they went out to the field and harvested some garlic and harvested some asparagus because their garden isn't quite ready yet. They still have to plant it. But that space is really to learn and explore. And, you know, we have those spaces where it's like no running. You know, you got to be respectful.
Sure.
But then these zones where it's like, here's an open field and plants and go crazy and learn something. And so having that ownership of planting something, nurturing it, and then also cooking that produce, it's a great full circle.
Well, sure it is. One of the things that hit me, Pitney Meadows has a fantastic website. It's so good that you get on there and you could spend hours just looking at what they do and getting interested in one or more things. And it's just amazing. But one thing that stood out to me was the edible weed walk.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So that's going to be super fun. We actually have a Wandering Wednesday for kids foraging. And then we have the edible weed walk because a lot of weeds that we have in our garden are actually more nutritious than the produce that we grow.
Really?
Yeah. So there's there's purslane and amaranth and all these kinds of plants that are actually pretty good, edible, and have interesting flavors. And we just pull them out and compost them and weed them, but they're actually more nutritious than some of the, the plants that we're growing. So
now, is asparagus one of the late crops, like Brussels sprouts, that you can pick?
It's one of the first crops.
Oh, it's one of the first crops.
Yeah, so it's an early spring crop.
All right. Hey, have you ever eaten milkweed?
I have not.
There's a restaurant in Rockwood. It's outside of Johnstown.
Oh.
And they serve everything family style. It's been there for 100 years.
Oh, wow.
But one of the things that they serve in the spring is milkweed.
Wow.
And it's, I'm telling you, it's so good. It tastes like asparagus, close to it. But they can't advertise it. So the only, because it's, they go on the roadside and get, or in the fields and that. So they put a thing in the paper. It's a big block that says milkweed. And everybody knows that Saltzman's has milkweed, so let's go to, you know.
Oh, that's great. And that's stuff that we love is just like, there's this thing that's growing. Let's figure out what it is, and then if we can cook
that.
You
should try milkweed.
I'm definitely going to.
I don't think the pods are you can eat.
Yeah.
But it's the stem.
The stem.
And, oh, my gosh. It's delicious.
Yeah, and milkweed's great for monarch butterflies, so we definitely plant it and encourage it at the farm as part of our pollinator habitat.
Now, you mentioned one thing, and we're ready to go because we have to turn it over to Homer and his fantastic music. But you mentioned cocktails at the July event. Now, is that like chocolate milk and buttermilk?
No, we're gonna be doing some alcohol.
Oh, dear me. Well, okay.
Yeah.
See, that's
not a, it's not a, we have our kids' garden club. This is not, Fire Feast is not a kids' garden club. It's where the adults can come and explore the farm.
So you have the adult beverages.
Adult beverages.
All right.
Yes.
Well, listen, Lynn, it's always great to have you here. And I told you, you're going to be on at least four times a year.
Yep.
Spring, summer, fall, and winter.
Sounds
because
great.
Because there's always things that are going on.
Yep.
And it's always good to remind people, even from like we did today, catch up on the back show to let them know. And like I said, I know there's friends of mine that want to come down. And I will hook Kiwanis and the Key Club up to some projects over there.
Yeah. We got them. We've got plenty of projects.
I know. Now, you said you run. Do you, do you run in marathons or just?
I'm training for my first marathon.
Whereabouts?
Somewhere in the Adirondacks.
Oh, okay. Because they have one in Utica, the Boilermaker.
Oh, when is that?
Well, it's in July.
Oh,
I
don't think.
15,000 people that run in it, and Utica's a very small area.
There's no way I'm running a marathon while I'm gearing up for Fire Feast.
Okay.
Fire Feast is going to be my July marathon.
Exactly. That's your marathon. That's right. And you got some incentive there to...
My training program is not going to have me ready for July.
Well, thanks for being with
Thank
us
Thank you
today.
For having me.
Oh, it's always great. It really is. And I promise I won't call you Liz again.
Oh, it's fine. Everyone does.
All
but
right.
As long as you get the name Pitney Meadows right, that's what I care
that's
about.
That's what you care about. All right. Well, we had a great guest today, and she is a Talk Saratoga All-Star now. But I want to turn it over to, and he's a Talk Saratoga All-Star, too, because he helps me out an awful lot. And I won't be here next Saturday because I'll be at the Belmont, and Homer's going to fill in my 3 hours, too. And I want to thank you, Homer, and get back into some great music here because your show is unbelievable.
Thank you so much, Rick, and have fun at the Belmont next week.